This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk. And don't we all love Fridays? Above average investing for the average investor is what we're all about. This is our daily roundtable discussion. I don't know if it's a roundtable, but it certainly is a discussion. You know, you always have a place at the table, whether it's round or not. Don't feel intimidated. If you're just starting out, that's okay. Beginner questions are fine. You know, advanced questions are fine too. Whatever questions you have, I would love to talk to you about. Now, advanced questions might be too advanced for me, so, you know, that's possible too. Your calls are always welcome, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're live between 4 and 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, so we're live right now. And when we're not live, just leave the question, and we'll answer it on the next Invest Talk. We really will. Now, we're going to talk today somewhat about what pundits typically don't talk about, where not to put your money, and why. That's going to be one of our main talking points today. Four types of investments to avoid. And it's pretty hard. One of the four things is pretty clear, but the other ones are kind of hard to... Well, we'll talk about it. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Time for this market update for Friday, July 7th. Stocks ended higher Friday, pumped up by stronger-than-expected employment data. The Dow gained 94 points. The S&P 500 rose 0.64%. The NASDAQ outperformed, advancing more than 1%. And about those jobs, we added 222,000 jobs in June. That was higher than the 179,000 expected. But the unemployment rate bumped up to 4.4% from 4.3%. Looking at wages, wage growth nudged up just 0.2%. That's our market summary for this Friday, presented by KPP Financial. Now, let's get back to your calls. Even though this is a select Invest Talk replay, you can still call our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll get to it on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Now, do you have any questions about brokerage accounts, life insurance, reverse mortgages? Anything that's worth talking about is financial, I will talk about. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line. We're our live 4 to 5 Pacific time, as I said earlier, so we're live right now. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Vince in Fairfield. How are you doing, Vince?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for your program. Any stock that pays dividends.
Yes.
I was looking at that, and I think I'm investing, and I want to invest in dividend stocks. I only have money in tax-deferred accounts.
An IRA kind of account.
Yeah. Is it inappropriate to hold those inside an IRA? Or if you do hold them, can you ask your broker like Schwab or Scott to, when the dividend comes, put it in another account?
No, because it's an IRA. And any money you make in that IRA that you take out is a distribution from your IRA to you into another account. So they probably cannot do that without tax and penalty consequences.
But it is inappropriate, basically, I think, to hold that type of stock inside a tax-deferred.
Why would it be inappropriate? I'm not sure.
Because when I pull it out, I'm paying a higher tax, right?
When you do pull it out, you'll be retired, and you're going to be paying tax on that money. But it pays a dividend to you. That dividend just goes into your IRA. What would make that dividend any different than any other dividend?
Well, if it was in a taxable account, I would be paying a 15% tax. But when I pull it out, I still might be paying 35%.
That's right.
Get out of an IRA.
You're exactly right. In a regular account, the dividend would be at a 15% capital gains tax rate. The idea, Vince, is when you're in retirement, your tax rate also will be low.
Well, it might.
But yeah, it might and it might not.
Right, so right. If it's higher than the 15, it's not a good situation to hold those within a tax-deferred vehicle, right?
That would be a reason not to hold them, yes. I don't know if I would not do it, but that is a reason
correct.
To make it less attractive. Let's say it that way.
And am I thinking correct? I think you need to be in the stock market to make money. Mm-hmm. But at my age, I'm trying to do it in a safe way. And I'm thinking that usually stocks that pay dividends are pretty good companies. They're going to be around. They don't fluctuate a lot. And that's a safe way to invest just as much as it would be being in bonds?
I don't think bonds are safe in some situations, unless you hold them to maturity and they're really high-grade bonds.
Right, but when you buy funds and things, that's
not. Yeah, that's more scary because the funds have maturity dates different all the time, so the NAV, net asset value of the bond fund, goes up and down. It could be very erratic.
That's correct.
So if you hold bonds themselves and hold them to maturity, they will eventually go back to their value and you get your yield. So if you have a proper spread of bonds, it would be a safer thing to do. When you say the word safe and you talk about stocks, I have trouble putting those two together. Safer, large cap stocks paying dividends, which you kind of alluded to, you could say those are safer than less small. Risky might be a good word. Less risk.
It's less risk.
Less risk, yes. Thanks for the call, Vince. Right. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It.
Thanks, Vince.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to AZ in Van Nuys. Hi, AZ. How's it going?
All right. I'm trying to come up with questions for you. When the news comes, good or bad, is any statistic for effect of news on a stock? Let's say when you get upgraded, it usually goes up 12%. When you get a contract, it goes up that much.
Yes, that's pretty typical. Also, when it gets downgraded, it'll go down. Some of these upgrades and downgrades really have nothing that, you know, they really don't mean a lot. They really don't, because these guys are wrong a lot, these quote-unquote experts. But it does affect the stock in the short term, yes.
Where do I find this statistic? Any site, any places you think they might have that as a statistic?
Where the statistic is how much something goes up or down? What AZ is referring to, everybody, when they upgrade or downgrade a stock, it might go up that one day or down that one day, but it doesn't recover some of that.
Correct. Now, the question is, is it any statistic on library, universities, anywhere? They have this kind of effect of the news on a stock, of what percentage goes up and down on what news?
I've never seen anything or read anything, anybody tracking those statistics. But, AZ, it wouldn't surprise me if someone did.
I'm trying to do.
I've never, you know, and I do a lot of reading and studying this stuff, and I've never seen anybody report on, you know, what the movement is the one day, 2 days, 5 days, 10 days after the announcement, you know. So I don't have any place that you can go that I know of, AZ.
You see, when I be completed after a year, then I write a book and I make some money.
There you go. That's what you do.
Tell me also, what's the earning per share we're talking about? What really means?
Okay, you know, a company sells products. After they pay all the expenses, and then what's left over is they divide that money by the number of shares outstanding, and then you get an earnings per share number. So it's what they actually made. They do it earnings per share. I made 20 cents per share. They do it that way because it's the only way that makes sense. If a company says I made $10 billion, is that a lot of money or not a lot of money?
Based on the share, I got you. This is what they made in 1 year, you're talking about?
No, it's usually earnings per share. When I talk to people, it's going to make like $3 next year earnings per share. That's for the whole year. But they always report it a quarter by quarter.
So when you say they divide it by how many shares they have, they divide the income for quarter or they divide the income for a year?
Well, usually when the earnings come out every quarter.
Oh, quarter. Okay, they're talking about quarter. Okay, you got it. For today.
Thanks,
Tracy. You can go home if you want. I finished.
Oh, okay, great. Four types of investments to avoid, everybody. That's one of our talking points. Also, we're going to talk about GM moving 600 more jobs from Mexico to the northern border. After already promising, 1,500 before? I don't want to talk necessarily about GM. I want to talk about why they are doing it and what kind of impact elsewhere that it might have. And I also want to discuss some of the statistics out this week, housing starts and retail sales in particular that came out this week. And finally, you know, retirement beneficiaries. You have a 401k, you have an IRA, you have a Roth, you have all these other things. Who is your beneficiary? Did you name a beneficiary and then subsequent beneficiaries to these things? Why is that important? It's extremely important, but why? I think that's something we very rarely talk. It seems simple, but I think there's, you know how I know that there's problems in this area? Because I talk to a lot of potential customers, and I see that who their beneficiaries are when they transfer to me, and I have to say this is wrong. I have to tell them why it shouldn't be this way. So we're going to talk about that. Those are the things we're going to discuss. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Words to live by, Sir John Templeton, founder of Templeton Funds. Buy at the point of maximum pessimism and sell at the point of maximum optimism. So where are we today? The problem was that the statement from John, which is all true, by the way, is the word maximum. Maximum pessimism, maximum optimism. Well, when's that? Who rings a bell at that time to tell us, oh, here it is? No one. 888-99-CHART, how to get through with your question right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Patrick from DeKalb, Illinois. I'm calling regarding a portfolio composition question. I've been very heavily U.S. equities, individual stocks in my portfolio, probably something like 90% for a while now, and I've done fairly well with it. And I've got a small portion, maybe 3% in short-term bonds, and the rest is in cash. And I'm looking to take off a lot of my risk and better diversify within the different asset classes. Specifically, I'm looking to reduce my U.S. equity exposure by buying some international exposure, and then also trying to figure out what to do with the even more conservative money, let's say 15% or so into bonds or cash, or what you would recommend for the more conservative portion of my portfolio, and how do I transition this? Do I do it all in one swoop, or do I slowly migrate from my basically 90% U.S. equities and then every so often sell some and then buy some either internationally or bond funds or REITs or whatever you might suggest? Love the program. Thank you, and look forward to your answer.
Okay, let's talk about diversification and more conservative, because diversification does not necessarily mean more conservative. So getting out of U.S. stocks and going to international or emerging markets, that's good diversification, but doesn't necessarily mean less risk, especially emerging markets, be more risk. Now, it might be a very good thing to do because the emerging markets and European markets have underperformed for quite some time, and maybe it's their turn to do better while our markets have overperformed. So in that sense, it's good to diversify. I just don't want you to confuse diversification with less risk. Diversification usually means a spread of the risk, but not necessarily less risk. Okay? Now, when you talk about bonds, and bonds are a totally different animal from stocks, and they would reduce your overall portfolio risk, because bonds move very different than stocks. Now, I would prefer to have you buy bonds directly and have a grouping of good, solid, corporate, high-quality corporate bonds or even municipal bonds in your state, and then ladder them. But most people can't do that. You don't have a big enough portfolio. You don't know how to buy bonds. You don't know when you're getting a good deal or not. So buying a bond fund is most of the time their option, either an ETF or a bond mutual fund. And I would keep the duration, the length of the bond, short. The length of the bond fund, the average duration of the bond fund, on the shorter side. That's about the best you can do. You can get a stable value fund or even a fund that a TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Bond Fund. And all those things takes a little bit of knowledge. And, you know, I can't just answer that quickly over the radio show. But that would be a good place to move away from the risk of the market. This is Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. Let's hear about your portfolio. Is it up to date? Do you need to make some changes? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Love to hear from you about whatever financial is on your mind. Okay, types of investments you should avoid. Because everybody talks about the investments. You need to buy this. You need to buy that. But how many times do people talk about avoiding something? These are the kinds of things you should avoid. And, of course, once in a while you hear about it, but I'm going to talk about it anyways. First thing, always avoid high-fee mutual funds. Now, what's a high fee? The average mutual fund's fee is about 1.1, 1.2%. That's average. You can find funds that pay much less than that. The whole Vanguard fund family charges pretty low fund fees. But about 1.1, 1.2 is the average U.S. large cap mutual fund fee. So why not avoid fees? Always avoid loaded fees, meaning commissions. Some unloaded funds, meaning commissions. Many funds, A shares, B shares, C shares. You have a little letter next to your mutual fund. That means they're commissions. There's no load, no commission funds out there. Just as many as loaded funds. So why? Make sure you avoid those. Avoid gold. Now, I bet you that shocks a lot of people. Gold on a long-term basis as an investment is not very good. That doesn't mean you never buy gold mining stocks or gold. It means that it is not a good long-term investment. It's a bad long-term investment. It's a good hedge against a market that's volatile or going down. It's a good hedge against a weakening dollar. But long-term investment is terrible. Go back 30 years, look how it's performed, and you'll see what I mean. It's a terrible long-term investment. Airline stocks. Avoid airline stocks. Now, for the last number of years, airline stocks have done pretty well. Long term, though, they stink. Ask Warren Buffett. He hates them. He has bought them in his past, but he hates them. He says if he has a toll-free number that he calls to talk him down from the possibility of buying airline stocks. Because they're terrible as a long-term investment. Think about all the airlines that have gone out of business in the last 30, 40 years. A lot. And remember, the problem with is one of the problems they have is the inventory they have goes worthless once that plane leaves the ground. What's their inventory? Seats. Empty seats. It's worthless. You can't resell it once it takes off. And finally, bad CEOs. Avoid companies that have bad CEOs. How do you know if it's a bad CEO? Well, one way is if he ever gets indicted or they have to restate their finances or anything like that. Stay away from them. Get away from them. Don't. Just pay attention. Don't. Don't stay with companies with bad CEOs. Okay, that's all I had. Hope that's enough. Anyways, well, I'll probably have more later on the show. Anyway, let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Let's go to Lisa in San Francisco. How you doing, Lisa?
Very well, thank you.
What can I do for you?
I am calling because at the moment, my husband and I have a mutual fund, and all of our investments are in the stock market.
Okay.
And we want to go into a safer mode.
Okay.
And we're looking into another mutual fund that has bonds. However, my concern, it will be more a bond fund. My concern is what is going on in the market, saying that the government is not solid enough, and so my concern is those bonds and the treasuries. It's usually most of it, what we're looking at is into treasuries.
Okay.
Am I moving my money? Are bonds risky? I mean, corporate bonds could be because it depends on the corporation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about U.S. bonds.
Okay. That's a good question, Lisa. The bonds itself, the U.S. Treasury bonds themselves are not risky. but a bond fund is risky. Yeah. When you buy a bond directly from the U.S. government, you get the bond, you hold it to maturity, so you get your interest and you get your money back, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in a bond fund, they buy all kinds of bonds in there. Okay, uh-huh. And they have different maturity dates because they buy some today and then they buy some tomorrow, next week, the weekend, on and on and on. So what happens in a bond fund, they have bonds maturing all the time and they reinvest the money, right?
Uh-huh.
So if interest rates right now are 4%, you're going to get 4% about a yield on your bond fund. But if interest rates go up to, let's say, 8%, the old bonds are paying 4% go down in value, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you can buy a new one for 8. Those old ones, I'm not going to buy those unless you give me a big discount on them to give me an ultimate 8% return because they're so cheap. So what happened is the bond fund value, the net asset value, you know, what the bond fund is worth, goes mm-hmm. down when interest rates go up, even though you still get the yield. You get the payment of the dividend, okay? So if interest rates start to rise over next week, next month, next year, 2 years, 3 years, the value of your bond fund, therefore, and will go down. Therefore, the money you put in will go less, get less and less and less. But you'll still get your dividend yield.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Very good question. It's ready for Invest Talk, everybody. InvestTalk Insiders now, our most recent wealth webinar is there. You can now, it's ready for you. Want to see it? The basics of residential real estate investing with real estate investor Chevy Atkinson and Justin Clark. You can sign up to be InvestTalk Insider just by going to investtalk.com.
Our podcast continues next. First, a number from KPP Financial. It's reason number 2 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Reducing risk is the number one priority for everyone these days. In a low interest rate environment, you crave those great returns that stocks can give, but you're afraid of the risk. So what's the formula? Well, Steve can help you come up with an answer that fits your life situation. And there's never any charge for a complete portfolio checkup for our InvestTalk listeners, and no obligation of any kind either. To schedule your 1 hour with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review. Or if you'd rather, call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now let's continue with the podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. So GM announced it's going to move 600 more jobs north, a part supply division of GM. They're going to move that closer to where they make their SUV here in the U.S. And, you know, that's after moving another number of companies moving their products back, or their production back to the U.S. And, of course, you know, that's a big issue for Trump to move them north. But the question, the issue for you and me as an investor is this a trend that's going to be take place? Recently, lawmakers are looking at adjusting the law, tax law, to try to make it more even from the south of the border to us. And that would make it cheaper to build stuff here in the U.S. I think we got to look at this as a continuing prospect for the future, that the laws are going to be changed, and there's going to be better or different trading laws. You heard about Cuba today with Trump trying cutting that Obama deal off, but he wants to and willing to negotiate a better deal. I think that kind of thinking is going to continue throughout his presidency, and we as investors have to take that in consideration when you're investing in companies that have international markets. You may not want to invest in something that is moving their production here because it might cost more money. Vice versa, you may want to because it's more friendly atmosphere here. So I just want you to be aware of these changes and consider them when you're investing in big companies that have, you know, international exposures everywhere. I do think for the U.S., it's a positive move to bring back more jobs here. I think it's positive, not negative, positive. It used to be, you know, big corporations, well, they wanted to move because it's cheaper. Well, that, you know, for a number of years, we've talked about that, that it's not as cheap as it used to be. China, India, they're getting more expensive making products closer to their where they're sold, becoming more and more important. And we are a big consumer-driven market, so you're going to see this trend. It has been going on long before Trump became president, but now he's going to put more emphasis on it, and that'd be good.
Time for this market update for Friday, July 7th. Stocks ended higher Friday, pumped up by stronger-than-expected employment data. The Dow gained 94 points. The S&P 500 rose 0.64%. The NASDAQ outperformed, advancing more than 1%. And about those jobs, we added 222,000 jobs in June. That was higher than the 179,000 expected. But the unemployment rate bumped up to 4.4% from 4.3%. Looking at wage growth nudged up just 0.2%. That's our market summary for this Friday, presented by KPP Financial. Now, let's get back to your calls. Even though this is a select InvestTalk replay, you can still call our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll get to it on the next InvestTalk.
Okay, remember, we love beginner questions, so we welcome your question at 888-99-CHART. Now, what is the question?
Steve, I got a question for an income portfolio,
okay.
Part of it, preferred stocks.
Yes.
You get them for 5.5%, 6.5%.
Yep.
What do you think? What's your idea?
I like it. If you're looking for income, everybody, now that's what George said. He's talking about an income portfolio. He's looking for income coming into his portfolio. You could buy some really good stocks, preferred stocks, really good companies, and buy their preferred. And a preferred stock, in case you're not aware of it, you have the common shares and the preferred shares. Not every company has preferreds. Preferreds are stocks that act like bonds, okay? They pay a dividend yield. So your preferred, your yield is pretty safe. Now, there are different kinds of preferreds, George, and you probably know that. Convertible preferreds, I don't know if you've gotten those. That's when they can convert to a common stock if they go to a certain price. What happens, everybody, is George is going to collect his 5, 6, 7%, whatever the yield is, on the preferred stock. And if the stock value goes up on that preferred, he may also get capital gains. It does not, though, go up like the common stock. It doesn't go up in lockstep, no. Are down in lockstep for that matter. They they're more stable, I would say. George, I kind of like the idea as long as you buy an underlying company that's very strong.
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay, George.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. John in San Diego. How are you doing, John?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I've got a small dilemma that's turning into a huge one.
Uh-oh.
I'm 57 years old. My hopes for retirement are somewhat daunted by the fact that I started saving too late.
Okay.
So I'm not destitute, but at the same time, I don't think I'm going to be able to generate the kind of income that I need for retirement. Mm-hmm. So my play, if you will, is do I take what little I have, not be so conservative to try to generate the kind of income that would help me, or I just not retire?
And you're 57?
I'm 57.
How's your health?
I guess I'll say fair.
Well, John, I'm going to have to tell you, you're going to have to keep working.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all there is to it. 57, probably we're not going to touch that IRA till about 65. That would be my suggestion. Mm-hmm. I would be fairly aggressive with it because you kind of need to. You are taking risks doing that, but you're going to kind of have to because you're going to have to keep working anyways.
You know, I'm a teacher. I've got some STIRS money, but I'm not going to live long enough, if you will, in order to, you know, accumulate the amount of years that it takes to really get a good income out of it.
Yeah, because they do have great retirement benefits.
Yeah, they do, but, you know, it starts getting great at about 28 years.
Exactly.
and we're far from there.
I kind of think you need to be aggressive. You really need to sit down with somebody, financial planner or some, or myself, I don't care, and just take a look at your whole picture. It sounds morbid, but do you have any prospects of inheriting any money?
Well, probably not.
Okay.
My only thought is that maybe, you know, my house, you know, at towards the end there, we, you know, do some kind of,
reverse mortgage.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. That's a thought. See, that's what the kind of questions you need to sit down with somebody. And we do that, too. We're registered investment advisor. We're not financial planners, but we do that. We ask those kinds of questions and give you different alternatives and tell you what you can do. And that's what a good financial planner would do. But I don't want you to pay the money to have that done.
Well, you know, that's part of the problem is just, quite honestly, not knowing what resources are available. Since I don't have a lot of money to begin with, you know, I need to probably start to someone who, you know, who is either very gracious and has more time on their hands to just give me a handout or to, you know, that wouldn't charge so much.
John, if you call me at the office, I'll be happy to talk about some of these details with you.
Okay.
And I'll get more information from you so I can get a better picture of your overall situation. And then
right. We'll
come up with some alternatives that I know about. I'm not an expert. I don't pretend to be, but I do know a lot about it because I talk about it all the time and
to
all kinds of people.
Well,
so,
that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. If you have a 401k account, here's a KPP investment program that may make life a little bit easier for you, less stressful. It's called our Active 401k program. It's a new system that can meet a serious challenge for the average investor out there. How to make informed choices within the limits of your employer's 401k plan. How do you do that? Well, this solves that problem. If you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the investments tab and look at the active 401k.
One of the most popular topics on Invest Talk is real estate. Mostly, I'm sure, because so many people have a stake in it. But real estate questions can be very specific, related to a person's individual situation. Well, now there's another source of answers for your real estate questions. You can ask Justin directly. He's a licensed real estate agent and can give you a professional opinion. You can get a note to him with your question on investtalk.com. Just click on Contact Justin, and he'll get right back to you.
Now let's go to Michael and Glendora.
I want to ask you, how important is book value?
Book value is pretty darn important. You know, if you go to the Bible of value investing called The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham, it's in paperback right now, is written in the 30s and 40s and republished many times. Benjamin Graham, which is the grandfather of value investing, says that you should never buy a stock that's over book value. Now, it's almost impossible to find one in this day and age. But in his time, book value was the way you evaluated stocks. You wanted to buy a stock that was less than book value. And for everybody else, book value means if you took all the assets, took all the liabilities of a company, you paid off all the liabilities and you had what was left, that's book value. And you want it to be below one. Therefore, you would still get money for your stock.
Right.
Okay? In a very simplistic terms, that's what that means. Right now, we don't like to see too many multiples time book value.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to Joseph in San Diego. How are you doing, Joseph?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. The question I had was, I never really invested in the stock market, but I have like $10,000 I want to invest. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, what would be the best way to do that? Would it be to go through an investment group or buy stocks individually?
Probably, Joseph, it's probably too small to buy stocks individually because you don't want to buy one or two or three. That's
okay.
Not enough. You can do it, Joseph, but it's high risk. That's what that means. You can obviously buy, and you can buy a very safe company like a Johnson & Johnson or ExxonMobil. But even those, when you only have two or three or four in your portfolio, that risk is pretty high. The best thing to do maybe is to buy an exchange-traded fund, ETF. You know what that is?
Yes, I've read about it.
Okay, ETFs are all over the place. You can buy an ETF of the S&P 500. You can buy an ETF just for technology.
Okay.
You can buy an ETF for oil or oil services. You can buy an ETF, but what happens is these little ETFs have a group of stockings inside them, like a mutual fund.
Okay.
But they trade like stocks. It would probably help you a lot if you joined an investment club because you learn a lot.
Okay.
And if you have that interest, that would be good. Also, start reading some of the books. Get my book. That would be a good start. Or Peter Lynch's books. they would be a good start. My book is Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. And
okay.
It's a pretty simple little book. You can get it at Amazon.com. But Peter Lynch has very good, easy books to read for beginners. Good luck with that, Joseph. I hope it works for you.
All right, thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You. How about if we go to Bill in Livermore? How you doing, Bill?
Yeah, I'm doing good. You?
I'm great. I'm really doing well.
My question was, what's the difference between a registered investment advisor and a certified financial planner?
Very good question, and there is a great big difference. A registered investment advisor is a guy who manages portfolios. We actually manage money. A financial planner does not manage money. A financial planner manages every piece or aspect of your financial life. In other words, he may suggest you buy life insurance. He'll talk about your medical coverage. He'll talk about your house and what kind of mortgage you have, and maybe you need to refinance or get a different mortgage. And he will talk about, you know, where you should put your money in this mutual fund or that, and he'll sell you loaded funds. He'll tell you to put them in loads. But he himself does not manage money. A registered investment advisor gets paid taking a small piece of the money he manages. A financial planner usually gets paid in one of two ways. He gets commission on the products he sells, life insurance, house, remortgaging a house. He gets a fee for that. He gets a fee for sending you to loaded funds. Okay, but he physically does not manage the money, which an advisor does. We get paid a fee for managing the money.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Lorem, Oakland. How you doing, Lorem?
Pretty good. Thank you for taking my call. My situation, basically, I had a 401k with a previous employer, and then when I left that employer, I switched jobs. I went to another employer, basically hung out with them for a year, and then I'm at a new employer. Mm-hmm. So my previous 401k is, I've not been able to contribute much into it. My current employer right now doesn't really have a very good 401k. Mm-hmm. They don't have any pre-tax matching. Mm-hmm. And I was looking into opening another IRA. Mm-hmm. And basically, I came across some of these funds, which are called time-managed funds. I was looking at T. Rowe Price, Vanguard, and Fidelity. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your take on it because I'm 40 right now, so I'm looking at like a 25-year, you know, the 25-year product that they have.
I'm familiar with those, and I particularly don't care for them. It's not like they're bad. I don't want to say that. I just don't care for them because of the automatic way in which they move from stocks when you're real young and slowly go to bonds when you approach retirement.
Uh-huh.
They can move toward bonds at the very wrong time in the market. They don't pay attention to what's happening in the real world. That's not what they're paying attention to. They're basing it on your age. So interest rates could be really high or really low, and they're still going to move to bonds. And bonds, notoriously, are bad performers. Yes, they will get more conservative as you get older, and that's really what they've been designed to do, to get more conservative. And how they do that is they generally buy bonds.
I see.
And it's for everybody else, what they do is they'll say, okay, we have I forgot what they call them, but they'll have a date on it, like 2025.
Exactly.
And that's the date you're, quote-unquote, are going to retire. And as the time gets closer to that date, they change the mix inside to get more conservative generally, and that means buy more bonds. Well, what if in 20 years from now, 5 years before you're retiring, interest rates are 4%? Who wants to be in bonds?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, Steve, here's a question I have for you. What would you recommend for me? I'm 40 right now, and I'm trying to get my wife and I are going to open individual IRA accounts,
okay.
And I'm the type where I just want to go super aggressive and just go put
okay.
the pedal to the metal.
What I want you to do, Lorem, is I want you to go to investtalk.com, email me, remind me of this conversation, tell me you're going to do IRAs, right?
Right.
Tell me the amount of assets you're going to have in the IRA,
okay.
And I will give you a list of mutual funds that you can invest in. They'll be much, I think, will be over 25 years, far outperform those time management type of
Oh, that's
accounts.
Great, because I don't qualify for the Roth, so that's what I'm just trying to seek out right
okay.
now.
Yeah, just
hey,
email me.
Lot,
I'll be happy to. Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you. We got one more segment left to go. 888-99-CHART.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to me. How you doing? San Jose.
This is Sunny here. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Steve, I have a question regarding how to construct a bond ladder.
Okay.
And I think you mentioned somewhere in the program about high-quality corporate bonds.
Yes.
Or the muni bonds.
Yes.
So I have a two-part question. The first is how to construct bond labeling and what should be the maximum duration you should go for, and where you can actually buy the direct bonds.
Okay.
I found one website called fmsbonds.com. I don't know if you are aware of.
No, I'm not.
Or you should be going through like E-Trade or Ameritrade or something like that.
You really can't go through a discount broker because you need a bond desk that you buy the bonds, and it's a little bit more difficult. And it's difficult for a person that is small that doesn't have millions of dollars because, you know, bond desks don't really want to deal with $10,000 increments in bonds. And you need to build a ladder of a number of bonds, meaning you have 10, 15 different bonds coming due maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now. I would not go out more than 5 years in duration. And for an individual who doesn't hire a manager such as me, because I have a bond ladder in my balanced income portfolio, half of that portfolio for the clients is high dividend paying stocks, and the other half is a bond ladder. And so I can buy bonds and give people smaller bits of bonds because I buy millions at a time. More difficult for you, but you can build a ladder with a bond funds, even though I don't like it, by buying short-term bond funds and then an intermediate-term bond fund, but not long-term in this environment because they would really get hurt when interest rates go up. The reason why you want to buy the bonds direct is because when you buy them at par and hold them to maturity, you get the interest rate during that period of time, the yield from the bond, and at maturity, you get the money back at par. You buy a bond fund, they usually go down when interest rates go up, and the bonds themselves inside mature, but not the bond fund itself. So it always reacts to rising and lowering interest rates, and if interest rates rise over the next few years, the bond fund NAV, net asset value, will go down. Where if you buy the bonds directly, they go from par back to par. You buy $10,000 worth, it will mature at $10,000. And you get the 3, 4, or 5% yield every year while it does that. That's why I like the bonds directly. It's more difficult to me for an individual to do it. It's doable, it's just more difficult. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Matt in Cupertino. How you doing, Matt?
Thanks for taking my call. A quick question for you. I was curious in your opinion versus mutual bond funds or individual bond ladders.
I would rather see you buy a ladder of individual bonds than bond funds.
Mm-hmm.
You know why?
You tell me.
Okay.
That's why I'm calling.
Okay. Bond funds now, you got to remember what a bond fund does. It buys a bunch of bonds. So you get nice diversification. That's a big plus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the net asset value of that bond fund will go up and down depending on interest rates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if interest rates are moving up and you have a bond fund, the net asset value of that fund will go down. You'll still get your yield, in other words, the dividends that are coming in through those bonds. You'll still get those. But if your yield is 5% and the bond fund net asset value goes down 5%, you're no further along. If you buy the bonds direct and you buy a good spread of very safe bonds, I'm not interested in high risk stuff. We're talking about very safe stuff. If you buy them and hold them to maturity, they also will go up and down in value, but you will always get your money back plus the yield if you hold them to maturity. Whereas in a bond fund, that doesn't happen, even though they may hold them to maturity, but the bond fund value goes up and down based on the interest rates. So you can buy a personal bond and you can buy it and hold it, and it will go up and down in value, but if you hold it to maturity, you'll get that money back. That's not necessarily so in a bond fund.
That makes total sense. You saved me a few hours.
Okay. Matt, I appreciate it. I like bonds. I'm not opposed to them, but right now I'd keep them short duration.
Like 1 to 5 or how short?
5 years or less.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the call. We have a program that does buy bonds. We hold in maturity inside there. So we know that they'll go up and down in value, but we'll get the yield, and they'll go back to their par value when they mature, so that you don't have that huge risk of a bond fund that will go up and down. Time to close up for the day, everybody. The hour is done. The week is done. So we have to wait till next week to do this again. If you missed getting on my schedule for San Jose the day before yesterday, I will be in San Jose again on July 18th, meeting with people. If you want to sit down and meet with me, go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. Again, that's July 18th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP, we'll see you again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.